It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, and Alex are all here. We're going to talk about the latest Apple news. Is Apple really slowing down iPhone production, or is this just business as usual? Renee makes an apology for his iPad review, and we'll revisit the Apple holiday ad. It's a great one this year, and it's coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 637, recorded Tuesday, November 20th, 2018. An attractive nuisance. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used devices. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device. Visit gazelle.com today. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software helping small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the world of Apple from the perspective of three fine Apple journalists, starting with, of course, from iMore.com, Renee Ritchie. Hello, Renee.
Hi, Leo. It's good to see you again.
Snowing?
It is. It is snowing right now. And I just want to say before we start, tremendous episode of Twit on Sunday. You guys just killed all Facebook.
Wasn't that fun with Georgia, who's so wonderful, good. And Georgia Dow and Brianna Wu.
Yeah.
Two of my favorite people. And then
such a compelling debate, though.
There was some other guy in there. I don't remember who that was.
Someone from CBS.
CBS. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, we had a good time.
It was awesome.
Well, thank you. And I thought we ended up not talking about tech news all that much.
Although Facebook is arguably the biggest tech story of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. We certainly talked about them quite a bit. Andy Inocco's here from WGBH in Boston, Inocco.com. Hello, Inocco.
Hello.
Hello.
Are you spatchcocking, brining, or defrosting it? Right. You should be doing one of those three things.
One of those three. And don't forget sous vide. I'll tell you about that in a second. But first, Alex Lindsay's also here from the Pixel Core.
Hello, hello.
He's Mr. Sous vide, deep fat fry spatchcock guy.
I do like the sous vide.
Sous vide. I'm not even making a turkey this year.
I'm not making a turkey either. I'm eating a turkey, but my mother-in-law is making
it. No one in my house will be eating turkey. I spent all day, literally from noon to 7 yesterday, making two lasagnas. I made a red and a green.
So good.
Pesto lasagna and bolognese. But that's the side dish for the giant 15-pound ham that I will be brining in apple cider, cinnamon, and cloves. And then baking, because it's not a fully cooked ham. It's not one of them spiral sliced. It's a corn cob smoked ham. And I'll be brining that and then getting up at 4 in the morning on Thanksgiving Day to put that in the oven for 8 hours.
So hungry right now.
That will be glazed with the apple cider brown sugar glaze.
I had a couple of failures on, you know, with turkeys, and so I'm not allowed to do the turkey.
Lisa said, do you ever deep fat fry turkeys? I said, no, I leave that to Alex. You can burn the house down with that.
We have to do it outside.
I believe Alex uses a flamethrower, though.
No. Just I actually built a turkey derrick, just like the Alton Brown one. That's, except for the light on the top was identical to the Alton Brown one.
Of course you did.
Beep, and, beep. Down, dive. Do you have a klaxon when it comes up?
I should. I don't know if the neighbors would appreciate that.
Alex shouts loud enough when the flames reach his pants. So
Alex's wife right now is going, Leo, stop. Leo, no more ideas.
No more ideas. And then let's see. I'll be making a sweet potato pie.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be making, I'm going to do cornbread stuff because there's nothing, no hole in a bird to stuff stuff into. So I have to make the dressing on the side. I'm going to make cornbread and sausage.
Sounds good.
Stuffing. I'm making the cornbread from scratch. Everything's from scratch. The noodles for the lasagna. Everything's from scratch. Even the pesto. I thought
it was coming to you.
I know. I thought I couldn't make pesto at this time of year, but I forgot we live in California, where everything is green, and I was able to get some nice basil, beautiful basil, and I made a nice pesto. So I had a lot of fun yesterday. It was a big cooking day, and then I guess really it's going to be a big cooking week. What are you doing, Renee? Oh, wait a minute. You already had Thanksgiving.
I know. I know. It's totally not fair. I want to do over.
But you do the same thing, right? You do the cranberry sauce and the stuffing and all that.
Hmm. Yeah. Turkey, all of that. Hmm. It was great. So, spoiler alert, Thanksgiving was tremendous.
Good to know. He lives in the future. Andy, will you be sous-viding your turkey today?
I'm doing my traditional like peanuts Happy Thanksgiving Charlie Brown thing where I'm going to be spending Thanksgiving with my sisters and their families, but I will also be like cooking my own Thanksgiving dinner. It's like that, so when I come home, I will have all the leftovers and everything I want. So yes, I'm sous-viding a 10-pound turkey breast. Let's see, got some stuffing going. I'm doing lots and lots of baking that I'm going to be doing for the family Thanksgiving, but I'm going to do some extra stuff for myself. So there will be bread and stuff. So yes.
Yes.
I am convinced that what trips almost everybody up for cooking a turkey is wanting to make it look like that Norman Rockwell, like movie prop, like golden turkey shaped thing. Whereas if you just buy two turkey breasts that are incredibly easy to cook, even if you don't sous vide them, and a bunch of drumsticks, which are so easy to cook if they're not part of the bird, and just cook gravy on the side, it's like Alex, can you rent like one of those like fiberglass like Thanksgiving turkeys and just do that for the pictures and the presentation, and then go back into the kitchen and bring out a tray of perfectly cooked breast and drumstick meat? That's because I think that's the best way to do it.
I think you could 3D print it, maybe. Maybe that would be the key. Just a big printer, and you just print something out that looks good. And just keep it in. You just keep it in a box. My solution is mostly I just stay out of my mother-in-law's way. She's from Louisiana and extremely skilled. So I just stay out of the kitchen and let my wife and my mother-in-law do their thing. And I cook a lot. I just don't cook on Thanksgiving or Christmas. Those are the 2 days that I just better to just clear the space.
Let others do it.
Yeah, just clear the space. Yep.
He's roasting a 23-pound frog.
We'll get to Apple News in a second. I hope you've enjoyed turkey talk. But I should point out the internet has been really flaky this morning. And this has been experienced across the board by a lot of sites. Facebook was down. You could see here, this is downdetector.com. You could see the flatline Facebook, Instagram. But you see LastPass. You see Facebook Messenger. Path of Exile. Here's SharePoint, Microsoft SharePoint, with big dead spot. I suspect this isn't any one particular company. I noticed people in the chat room complaining that some of them couldn't get to our website. I think there's some big provider that's gone down. I hope it's not an attack.
A tremor in the force.
Yeah, Hulu. You see this OneDrive. It's been a number of cloud providers. I'm not sure. Now, most of these guys are now kind of back up, but a lot of people complaining about Facebook being down. See, I didn't even
Amazon notice. Web Server. Amazon Web Services is pretty much the big.
Because that
runs the apps that everybody else is running on.
And as you notice, internet service providers have been fine: Verizon, AT&T, Comcast.
Yeah, it might be like a routing table sort of problem. Yeah, we've seen that twice provider. in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, we saw the BGP problem where Google traffic was routed through China thanks to a Nigerian internet service provider. These things happen.
And then when Pakistan tried to like shut down YouTube for Pakistan, they wound up shutting it down for almost everybody. that's real. You've got Don Knotts running your show at that point to have created for such a simple person to be able to cause such an international global problem. It's the scary reminder that yes, the internet is under threat by national interests, but also it's also vulnerable to the fact that it was created in the 70s and 80s by hippies who could not anticipate how making things open and free and transparent would screw everybody in the 2000s once the non-nerds got a hold of the internet.
So AWS, I'm just looking at their service health dashboard. It looks like there was some issue with the Elastic Compute Cloud in Northern Virginia, which I bet a lot of people run on API and launch error rates, but not any down stuff. So I just don't know what it is. I just wanted to note that it's happened. It seems to have been repaired, and we don't know what the story is. So.
Corto Maltese has weaponized the internet. Yeah. We're all doomed.
Well, we let me see. Our Twit website part is very complex, but part of it does run through, not on, but through Amazon Web Services. So I don't know. It's so complex that I don't really even understand it.
Yeah.
But that could be.
That's the other problem with the internet.
Yeah.
We trust that it works, but we don't. We're now in the phase where, remember now that you open the lid, the hood to your car, and there's just this plastic bonnet covering everything. You no longer even know that. Okay, that's the alternator. I bet it's a loose battery connection. There are fewer and fewer people who know what's wrong with the internet when the internet is no longer making us happy.
Yeah, and according to the internet traffic report, the internet itself is working fine. But see, if Amazon had a problem or somebody. Some provider had a problem, it wouldn't necessarily show up as an internet traffic issue. So I don't know what's going on.
It's complicated.
Facebook Tech Times says Facebook and Instagram are down and the internet goes crazy.
No, it's Facebook being up that makes people crazy.
Both.
That's my opinion. Facebook is, geez, everybody, all the fangs are suffering. They're all down, including Apple, 20% over the last couple of days. Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Google, all down about 20%.
They had a pretty good run.
Yeah, I mean, some of this could be profit-taking. The stock market itself has gone down. There's some uncertainty. Maybe some of this comes from the Wall Street Journal report, and I know that we do this every
year,
but I'm going to repeat it again. Wall Street Journal says that iPhone sales suck, man. All the suppliers are back. Apple said don't make any more. But Renee, I'll let you. You should probably have this canned.
I mean, I do at this point. So there's two things. One is sales could always go down any given year. Sales could be down. We're in a mature market, and most people have a smartphone. And the result of everyone wanting massive growth in smartphones and to have the next billion and to have massive market penetration is at some point the market gets penetrated and there's no Apple stores on Mars. The other side of that, though, is that historically every quarter, especially every big quarter, there has been a run of hedge fund managers. Jim Cramer had a remarkably candid interview about this many years ago where he said that whenever they want to make money, they just call up and start a rumor saying the
iPhone isn't selling. I don't know how that guy is not in jail. I just don't understand.
I don't know either, and they all do it. And they said that Apple sites love to run those rumors, so there's never any lack of anybody to publicize it for them. And they get the stock to go down, and then they sell their shorts, and they make their quarter, and they're super happy.
So this is today's Wall Street Journal. I guess yesterday's Wall Street Journal headline: Apple's suppliers suffer with uncertainty around iPhone demand in recent weeks. Apple slashed production orders for all three iPhone models that it unveiled in September. But if I remember you saying this last year when the same exact story was published, well, yeah. So they make a lot of them. They announce them. They sell a lot of them. And then they say, okay, we can slow down production now.
If you were Apple and you know, there's been a lot of years where we haven't been able to get the phone quickly. And so if I were Apple, I'd be telling our suppliers to be ramping up, be ready for something much larger than what I expected. And then I would pull them back. It's not very nice to the suppliers to do that. But it also means that as Apple, you have a better chance of getting what you needed quickly and have them really ready for the kind of demand that sometimes we've had. And a lot of times we can't get our phone for months because it's way behind.
Yeah, so getting Apple's them to ramp notorious up for not really caring so much about suppliers.
Yeah. Right.
Well, yeah, because they want their suppliers are supposed to be big boys and big girls who know how to run a business.
That's right.
And remember that it used to be every single quarter after the iPhone announcement quarter, shareholders would complain, analysts would complain that, wow, you let the waiting list for ideal models was like 2, 3, 4 weeks. They were turning away people who had money in their hands. Why can't Apple solve their supply issues? So Apple admits people trying to say, oh, well, this is an artificial suspension of demand because they like to have the pictures of all those those people in line. And no, they really want to take the money of anybody who shows up with money to throw at an Apple logo. And now that they're finally getting into a verve where they can figure out how to make sure that everybody who wants a phone can get them at the time that they want them, even if they want them on day one or week number one. Sometimes that means that means making sure that your customers are happier than your suppliers. So that's absolutely not a problem.
And a lot of companies do this where they cut back, you know, based on a variety of things. Just no one else cares about their product. Like, no one else is tracking how many and who they called. And I mean, this is a very common process, is to ask for more than you need and then pull back. You know, we're a supplier for companies that do that. So yeah. it's not uncommon for that kind of thing to happen. It's just that no one else is, they're not tracking every supplier's need for all these different services and goods.
Well, I don't know. I watch Billions, and according to what I've learned about the market from HBO, one of the things that really good investors do is go to, instead of just reading the, you know, market newspapers, they go and they check and they call and they make calls. And the journal says last week, big suppliers of iPhone components, including Qorvo, Lumentum, and Japan Display, cut their quarterly profit estimates, citing a reduction in previously placed orders from a, quote, large customer. Not Apple wasn't named, but a third to a half of the revenue in these companies, according to the journal, come from Apple. Foxconn cut overtime hours typically available during peak production periods. But again, this, you know, the market might draw a conclusion that the iPhone isn't selling well, but it could, as you know, as we've explained, there's could be good reasons for this. What do you think about maybe the 10R being a little disappointing, because that is brand new, right? The iPhone that came out a month later. Is it maybe that the 10R isn't selling that well?
I mean, there. If you look across the industry, like Samsung is, you know, they're rumored to be making a super phone now because they want to sort of regain the luster of the past. Nobody's selling a ton of phones anymore. And again, it could just be that the market is reaching a point where you have to look at the business differently. The 10R seems to be popular in North America. Whether it's popular or not internationally is difficult because the currency exchange is injurious at this point. Like a $750 phone in the US is a $1,000 phone in Canada, and
still
it gets
expensive
worse in Europe and Brazil,
yeah,
and Russia and places like that. And that probably does temper demand. So there's a whole bunch, and component prices. One of the reasons iPhones are so expensive right now is component prices are through the roof, which makes it unfavorable for everybody. So there's a confluence of a lot of factors that could be putting heavily on the iPhone, but also Apple brings on new suppliers all the time, and it's possible that Pegatron is doing more than Foxconn right now, or it's possible that a different supply company other than Japan's supply is picking up other volumes, and it's really hard to sort of pick and choose one or two suppliers and see what the pattern is.
And we may,
yeah, the other problem here is that in every single presidential administration before this, a company like Apple felt like they could make plans 2, 3, 4, 5, even 8 years in advance, even very conservative plans, but still they could plan well ahead. And now when I talk to people who are making those kind of decisions, they're like, we're not counting on any deal that we make today being enforceable in 2 or 3 years, because the downside of having our entire product run of a keynote product in 2020 rely on our ability to access a certain supplier at a certain rate in 2020 is now kind of in question right now. So it doesn't mean that they are not making phones anymore, but it does mean that decisions that used to be a slam dunk are now, there's a lot more math involved, and they're not willing to, again, gamble their entire company or all their profits for a certain quarter on being able to get access to a certain component that they desperately need from this one supplier. So there's a lot of calculus that is new in 2018 that wasn't part of the game in 2015 or 2016. Well,
in particular, tariffs and trade wars. If you're an e-bike manufacturer today, you're suffering. I've bought a couple of e-bikes in the last couple of months, and one of them, the one I've talked about, the Super 73, these guys just sent me a note saying, hey, we're sorry it's taken so long, but we've actually had to move our manufacturer outside the United States because 25% tariffs or 30% tariffs on Chinese-made motors, which is apparently the only reasonable place to get e-bike motors, is killing us. They said, we got one shipment that we couldn't accept because it would have cost us $300,000 in tariffs.
Yeah.
And so what they're doing is they're transshipping them to Germany, or where they're going to make them there, where they don't have to pay that $300,000, but that slows everything down as they set up new production facilities. And also, by the way, cost jobs in the United States and ultimately cost consumers because the tariffs just get passed along to
consumers. Well, and Apple may have seen this coming when they said they weren't going to talk about unit sales anymore. You know, like
that. Well, that's really what I'm asking here. I know this happens every year, but what I'm really saying is maybe there is something to it this year. Maybe because iPhone sales growth was zero, close to zero over the last quarter. Maybe there is. And one of the things I maybe think you could draw from this is that we saw this with the 5C, right? And the SE, that really people who buy iPhones aren't looking for the low price leader. They're looking for, they don't want to give up features. They want
the 1 terabyte version.
They want the best one.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think that Apple has seen that this is the market that they're, I don't think that it's that they're being elitist, but the market that's buying their phone are the ones that are interested in, that are buying it every year, are the ones that are interested in these bigger, higher quality phones. And so Apple's going to sell less units and they're going to move that ASP up. Based on that, because they're really just reacting to the market that is working with them, and they have that data, and they have been moving towards services for years. It's not like this is a sudden pivot. You know, they're really, you know, we can watch their income constantly increasing around the phone, as opposed to focusing on it, and even things like the watch are, you know, picking up speed.
Yeah, I think the 10R is a great choice. I don't think you sacrifice much, and you save $250, but. Obviously the market, maybe, no, I shouldn't even say that because we just don't know. Since Apple doesn't release sales numbers, no one really knows unless you stood outside an Apple store.
I think I just use the 2X. I think I use the 2X on my phone way too much to want to go to an R. That's my number.
Second lens that gives you that physical optical zoom. You really appreciate
that. I use that so often that I'm constantly reframing on my, once you get used to it, like for the first year, I didn't even do it.
You're giving up. The second lens, you're giving it up an OLED for an LCD, although I think that's a minor trade. And you're giving up 3D touch, which I don't think anybody cares about. So it really is the lens that people really care about, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, it's variable. It depends on whether people really care that much about the effects. I really think that portrait mode is a bigger sell for most people because
you still get portrait mode in the selfie cam.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is that I think that a feature like portrait mode, where it's here is the picture without portrait mode, here's the feature with portrait mode. When you talk about the zoom, people like us who really appreciate photography as opposed to taking pictures, taking snapshots, we can definitely see the difference. But nowadays, even when they're doing an optical zoom, they're not just blowing the pixels up like they were 5 years ago. Every phone now does a really, really good job of interpolating between pixels and trying to make it look maybe just like a suboptimal zoom. So I don't know if the average person who uses an iPhone for photography absolutely appreciates the difference between having that second telephoto lens and simply having a strictly digital zoom feature. I really think it's features like, again, here's like the Night Sight feature that just came to all the Pixel cameras. That there are people, I have a Pixel 1, like it's 2 years old. It doesn't have any of the advanced features of the Pixel 3 right now, but it's like I almost don't need to upgrade my phone now because I'm happy. I've got a camera that can do things it couldn't do before, and I think that's why things like portrait mode on the iPhone camera are kind of more important than these hardware features in terms of making customers happy.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah, it might be. Apple's done too good a job selling those features, making people want them. Right. Let's take a little break, and then Rene Ritchie is going to apologize.
I will. I'm sorry, Leo.
He was wrong.
I'm going to apologize for apologizing.
I want to defend you.
Okay.
I don't think you're wrong, but anyway. Okay. And then we're going to, I think I'll have Alex do this and I'll do this. We're going to snap our iPads in half. It's all coming up. It's all coming up next. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Time to get a new home. Time to get a loan. I don't know a whole lot of us who can write a check for a new home. It's really, frankly, the biggest purchase you'll ever make. And even that down payment check is probably the biggest check you'll ever write. So it's important. You're going to be in a long-term relationship with a mortgage lender. Make it the biggest, the best. Make it Quicken Loans. Number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years in a row. Oh, I have to add 2018. Yay, now 9 years in a row. They just got the J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction number one award for the 9th year running. 5th year running for, so it's 9 years for mortgage origination, 5 years for mortgage servicing. That's a lot of happy customers. And you know, you put them, you add them all up, you become the largest lender in the nation. Congratulations, Quicken Loans. That happened last year. Now, they've made it even better. So one of the things that makes Quicken Loans so popular with its customers is their focus on the customer experience. And they have, and we've talked about it before, created Rocket Mortgage for people like you and me who don't want to go to the bank. We just want to do everything online. Rocket Mortgage is an entirely online mortgage approval process with something brand new. They call it the Power Buying Process. Three steps. Step one, we've talked about it before. You answer a few simple questions right on your phone. They'll check your credit. They'll tell you what loans you qualify for. You pick your loan. You've got pre-qualified approval and all of that in about 10 minutes, less than 10 minutes. Step two takes place in the next 24 hours. A loan officer verifies income, assets, and credit. And they can do that in most cases without any input on your part because you've already given them permission to talk to, you know, they have all their trusted partners. They talk to the financial institutions and they verify all that information. And once they've done that, they'll give you verified approval. That means basically you have the strength of a cash buyer. You go right to the head of the line. There's no contingencies. You got the money, baby. That's within 24 hours. Took us 2 months to get that. Well, the last time we got a loan from the bank. I could tell you right now, Rocket Mortgage from now on for us. Once you're verified, and this is something new because rates have started to go up. They've implemented, they're all new and it's exclusive, Rate Shield approval. They'll lock up your rate. It can't go up. And they'll give you up to 90 days to find a house without the rates going up. I don't care if rates are going up. Theirs won't. If they go down, Quicken Loans will lower your rate. That's nice. Either way, you win. It's exactly the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's biggest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions could apply. Based on Quicken Loans data, in comparison to public data records, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. All you have to remember is this, rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. All right, who here, show of hands, has bent his iPad in half to see if it'll break? Why do...
No, I chose to do my Huawei tablet instead, like Snazzy Labs.
I blame YouTube. It's just the incredible rush for YouTube view numbers. Somebody's always got to try to break. Website that cracked the iPad Pro in half.
My contention is this is clearly farce. Like, if you watch Zach do that video, that is not a serious video. He's like saying it's aluminum and running a Zacto knife across the side of it. And like, this is a button and cut. Like, it is clearly like comedy theater. And then people took it super seriously.
The only thing I could take seriously is that Zach Nelson's making too much damn money. Man, this is, it always breaks my heart. It was the same thing with the Will It Blend guys. I hate seeing good products.
He draws Spider-Man on the back of it. It's farcical. Ow. It's not serious.
This hurts. This hurts my
heart. The difference is that the Will It Blend people, it's a waste of good technology, but no one is certain. It's not going to turn into like a 300-word piece on a serious news blog about new concerns start to arise about the durability of Apple's new landmark.
He's burning the screen.
I will, however, say that I love to see extreme durability tests that actually seem to be within the realm of what could happen. Because
he could have given that to a needy 10-year-old and changed a life.
Well, even better, he could have taken the $800 and given it to a food bank and changed several lives. But what I'm getting at is that my concern as someone who has a bike and puts things in a backpack and often travels and has a laptop bag, and I buy too many books and things on the trip and I have to kind of overstuff my laptop bag or my backpack, I'm always concerned about, is there going to be so much pressure on this thing inside the backpack that it's going to bend something a little bit. So I would love to see the hydraulic drill press guy do that only because he has a new like extremely fine-tuned drill press that could say, here's how much pressure it took before it started to bend. And then someone else could say, well, here's how much pressure is put on your backpack when Okay, just I went for my constitutional the other night. I decided to stop by the supermarket to just get a sandwich for dinner, and they had like that really really great sale on Diet Dr. Pepper that like only comes like three times a year, but you have to buy five. So I wound up having to cram like 10 liters of Diet Dr. Pepper, like immense, like 80 pounds worth of stuff in this backpack, and my notebook was in the bag as well, and I was pretty much okay with it, but I'm like, is this how I destroy a $1,000 laptop that I don't even own because I couldn't turn down 88 cents for a two liter bottle of Diet Dr. Pepper? So these are the sort of durability things we really need to start thinking about, because we don't I don't think they ever talk about the physical durability of their hardware. And I think that that's another feather they could put in their cap if they said that not only is it slimmer, but here's how, but of course we test everything to make sure that when you put it in your pocket, it won't bend. And of course we want to make sure that you'll get many years of life out of your iPad. And believe it or not, it is just as durable as any other iPad we've ever made. I really think that should be part of the conversation particularly people who are going to be laying out $1,000 potentially on an iPad Pro.
I think that there's a certain level of it. At some point when you start spending a certain amount of money, I mean, this I broke down, by the way. I bought an iPad. I couldn't.
We know.
I said I was going to wait.
We're not surprised.
And it looks pretty. It looks mighty good. You know who I'm going to end up buying one for? Alex, is my mom. She saw it and she said, I like that.
Yeah. Now, Alex, when you buy an iPad Pro, that's not the system breaking down. That's the Alex Lindsay system working exactly as it was intended to.
I'm not going to do it. Okay, maybe I will. So I got it. And the thing is if you're going to spend $1,500 on an iPad, you know, I'm going to take care of it. You know, like there's this crazy thing that if I spend a lot of money on an object, I'm probably not going to shove it in with a bunch of other things. And when I have a backpack that gets pretty heavy, and I'll have multiple laptops and multiple iPads that are doing different things. And I will admit that as I stack that stuff in and out, when I'm going to in and out of the airport, I think of every screen, every, you know, bend point, every, you know, thing that I'm doing, the way I stack the bag is thinking through what's going to bend and what's going to be under pressure and what's going to do all those things. Now, I admit that my first job out of high school was packing electronics. So I thought about it early, but I think that this idea that we can just treat, you know, relatively small things that cost a lot of money without any respect, I think is part of the, you know, it's not Apple's responsibility to some degree.
Spend $50 on the OtterBox case and slap it in that travel.
My dad dropped his phone and broke it his iPhone like the second day, and Apple, I guess, just replaced it. I mean, they didn't ask. Yeah. He didn't have anything. They just replaced it. He put it in OtterBox. You know what? He was an OtterBox.
Some ice cream. I'm going to pull an Andy here. There's some ice cream stores that if you get the ice cream and it falls off the cone as you walk out the door, will give you a new ice cream. And there's some that won't.
Right.
Yes. And honestly, the ones that don't, that seems legit. I mean, it's not their fault. But the ones it's like Apple, where they're being extra nice. But you can't expect.
I don't think what Apple wants to do is have a lot of conversations about when the product breaks.
Well, not promising things, but at least assuring you that when they start talking about how light and thin this thing is, that's going to be part of the buying decision that I'm going to make, because you're absolutely right. You should take extremely good care of things you spend $50 on, let alone $1,000. But the thing is, this is something that you're going to be carrying with you everywhere, and you're going to be traveling with it, and you're going to be putting it in an overhead compartment. And then maybe some idiot is going to think, oh, well, I bet if I could just push this laptop bag all the way to the side, I can cantilever my particle accelerator size box inside here, because who cares about someone else's laptop. But it's like things happen, and so it's good to have some sort of assurance.
Should you put a stiff board in your backpack to protect your? Well, I guess my real question, in my opinion, is
I actually have a sheet of acrylic that I use for a lot of different things when I travel, but part of it is I like to have something hard and flat, kind of set, so that it.
I use a MacBook for that. I just shield it with a MacBook.
And I actually think that the one thing they should let through TSA, personally, as someone who flies a lot, is they should allow you to carry a cattle prod to shock anyone who thinks that it's okay to touch someone else's bag. That is so uncool. Like the flight attendants, it's okay, but when you see someone else messing with somebody else's bag without asking, I just want a cattle prod. I just want just a cattle prod, just right
in the
ribs, right in the ribs.
I don't know. Isn't it in a common area now that
it is not?
Belongs to
it is
everyone?
Not. It is inappropriate and wrong. And, you know, it's right up there with people who take more than 10 seconds to get out of the aisle.
So Boy, we got a lot of mileage out of that. All I really want to ask, Dr. Pepper ice cream and particle accelerators aside, is the iPad more susceptible to bending than any other tablet?
There was a really great video on Snazzy Labs where Quinn did a parody of Zach's video, and he does it with a Huawei tablet, and he draws on the back of it, and he snaps it in half, and he pours out Dr. Pepper, I believe, in homage to Andy.
Should Apple put, as they did with one of the phones, right, put metal, you know, bars in there to protect it against bending? Or is that really...
They didn't just do that. They made a whole new aluminum alloy. They went from 6,000 to 7,000 series aluminum. But that was also because they introduced 3D Touch and needed a much higher level of stability in order for people to be pushing. Yeah, in order for not to move when you pushed it. So they're doing all those sorts of things. But it is a much larger... This is a thing. Metal bends, plastic cracks, glass breaks, and ceramic shatters. That's material science.
Break.
You pick your material, and then you try to mitigate as best you can against it. And do they mitigate well or not?
Alex has the hydrogen from Red Camera.
But it's not the titanium yet, Leo. Don't do it. He's waiting. Wait for the titanium.
You're waiting. The titanium's coming. Would you mind if I broke this?
Not until the titanium comes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the aluminum one.
I could really put some serious pressure on
the latest iPhones. I think Schwarzenegger can't break them.
What I was going to point out was
for $50.
Well, the interesting thing is that
I just want to get some hits on YouTube.
Oh, sorry. I meant that with my iPhone. I didn't buy it without buying a case for it just because I'm afraid I'm going to break it, you know. And
that thing you don't have a case on.
I don't put a case on.
Nobody makes a case with pistol grips on it.
Right.
That is the
number
case,
one is it wouldn't take to a case very well. And number two is I don't feel like I need it. Like it feels like it's going to probably handle the Holocaust.
It feels like you could murder someone with it. Just like in old movies when someone would like fracture someone's skull with the handset of a phone. The hydrogen phone looks like you could kill somebody by hitting them over the head with it. But I just want to say to my point, when Amazon introduced like their new, oh my God, like $80 version of a color Fire tablet, which I think we can describe as a suspiciously low price for a color tablet that runs a modern operating system. They actually said, here is video of it actually like in the tumble drawer. And they said, here, but feel free to like just drop it and not throw it, but just drop it on the cement floor if you want to, which is partly because they were selling this is a good tablet to give to your kids because, hey, it's $80 if they lose it, if they throw it out the car door. You're still going to punish them for it, but you're not going to be that heartbroken about it. But also making the point that just because it's an $80 tablet, that doesn't mean that it's made out of marzipan or anything. All I'm saying is that it would be great if Apple were showing as much pride in all of the engineering that they absolutely do to make this as structurally strong as they possibly can, as they do with all the other great features of an iPad. Because again, that's something that's going to be on people's minds. Isn't it terrible though that when these things happen, there are always those commenters say, you know, it'd be great if Apple did some actual real world stress testing. Oh, shut up. They do so much testing of these things that they're not going to make it impossible to bend. But once again, it's a nice thing to see that we reassure you that don't think that just because it doesn't look as strong as a Generation 1 iPad, it isn't as strong as a Generation 1 iPad, or at least
strong enough.
Took Liam
3 seconds to bend it instead of 4 seconds like last year.
Did it look like he pushed that Zach pushed it really hard, or did it look... Here's my iPhone XS. If I just do it a little bit, it's not...
Oh, there go the views, Leo. A million.
I broke it.
3 million views. Oh my God.
Okay, I said it was not made out of marzipan, but some of them are made out of licorice. I stand corrected.
This one I can't break. These are all 3D printed.
I think Zach couldn't bend the iPhone XS, even the Max.
Did he try?
The video for that one, it was just not. But that's a much smaller package and it's much thicker. So
I'm trying to judge this based on how red his fingertips are as he's pressing.
let's. Does Alex have his pointer from the takedown? He could do it right now.
Yeah, let's see. I suspect, based on the redness of this thumb, and that he's not pressing it that hard. No. I don't know. Could be. Of course, I could.
Giant sheet of aluminum and glass. You could probably fold it if you want to.
I could just color it in a little bit.
I see. In that kind of a folding gesture, if you're literally trying to fold it, I can give the iPad a pass on that. What I'm worried about is, again, unpacking my laptop bag when I get home from a trip and seeing that there's actually a bend in the screen because, again, there was some pressure. There's pressure.
Yeah, that's bad.
Anticipate on the bag.
And we've seen that.
Or
happen.
In my backpack. Yeah.
We've seen that.
I write
the iPad down on the table and it rocks slightly. That's not a good feeling.
Yeah, that's not a good look.
Yeah. And I have to say, in the past, in fact, it's so funny because I used to always worry about this with my MacBook Air. And now that I have an Air again, it's so light. I carry it sometimes by the corner. You know, down by the next to the trackpad, like I'm carrying it around open, and I go, "Oh, I'm pretty sure I've actually destroyed a logic board by doing that, by torquing it a little bit."
Right.
And that's probably not a good idea, but you just kind of tempted is to carry it around with you.
Yeah, legally it's called what's an attractive nuisance.
It's an attractive nuisance.
It's not that you're supposed to carry it that way, but when you make something that's that light that you want to carry from room to room, you're not going to get people to now first park the hard drive heads, put it to sleep. Once you get the light goes on, close it and then put it in a bag. No, you're going to just basically lift it by a corner and do that. So
it's an attractive nuisance. I keep catching myself doing that, saying, "Oh." So far, no problem. But so that's not that much different. Maybe they've put some rigidity bars in there to make it better. But I'm sure
they've done tests. I'm sure they've done engineering. The problem with this kind of engineering is that when you do the teardown, you don't see a carbon fiber gusseted frame like you do on the other side of a sports car. You just have to see the files that they used when they carved out that aluminum case. Like Renee said, you have to see the alloy that they came up with, knowing that they're making their own special kind of metal for this case. So that's why even just some sort of a paper on Apple's site would be great. I like the fact that Google has a lot of blogs where if you don't understand how a certain feature that they demoed works, there's going to be a paper from the AI team that explains exactly how it works. It would be great if Apple had a blog like that where they could simply not as a promotional thing, but basically let the people who designed the rigidity and the durability of the iPad Pro talk about how much work they put into it without having to haul out that white backdrop and talk just past the camera.
It's the toughest iPad we've ever made. They've never had to do that. You know, you can bend. See, these are like
they did with
expensive
Bengate. I think with Bengate,
devices.
They showed their they showed their testing equipment.
Right. Yeah. We call him Liam.
They only show their work when people doubt that they do that work. Right. Remember that?
I'm sure they do.
Like the time that when AntennaGate happened, that's when you find out their antenna testing labs. It's unfortunate. But I think Apple could avoid a lot of problems if they were more demonstrably proud of the legitimate pride that they have in a lot of the engineering that goes into these devices.
Yeah, it's kind of sad because we've just given Zach even more hits on YouTube and stuff. It just works.
It's a fun video. I was expecting one of those horror. Oh, Apple should be ashamed.
Breathless.
It really was one of those. You know, it's fun to watch somebody else destroy something. Again, if you put past the idea that someone who can't afford one of these things or once I think of that as $800 at a local food bank, like, because donating food is great, but they get even better deals on food that they buy themselves. So $800 would have gotten a lot, helped a lot of families in your region. But it's not, again, I'm the person who just spent like $6 on diet soda that I shouldn't be drinking that probably could have bought a few meals. So I shouldn't really complain at all.
Renee Ritchie, iMore, my bad. Yes. I was wrong about the iPad Pro. You felt obligated to re-review it. Why?
So let me give some context here. When I reviewed it, I reviewed the hardware because to me, iOS 12 was a known quantity. I'd already spent 20 minutes reviewing that or 6,000 words reviewing that. And I was up to 20 minutes and 6,000 words on this. So I didn't want to recapitulate what I felt was a known quantity. And a lot of people said yes, but Apple has escalated the hardware, so it is fair to revisit the software. And also, it seems like everybody decided to review. Like, if you go down the list on YouTube names, literally every review is, can iPad Pro replace your laptop? Which to me was like, I didn't even think about it because Apple so specifically, from Steve Jobs to Tim Cook, has said it's not a laptop replacement. I didn't consider that, and a lot of people said you should have considered that. So I decided to re-review it.
I understand
both from the laptop
confusion, because like with the what's a computer ad, Apple has kind of implied that this is the computer of the future.
No, totally, 100%. But it's like an iMac and a MacBook Air are both computers, but an iMac is not a laptop. Like there are different tools along the same spectrum that will suit different need paths. But the minute you
but what would people replace with an iPad except a laptop? You're not going to replace an iMac with it.
I mean, with some people are going to want a very high end. Like I have a 15-inch MacBook Pro that I use for Final Cut Pro, and I'm not going to take it with me everywhere. So I use the iPad Pro.
I know, but let's point
instead.
Out with the screen and the keyboard and the pencil, this is what a laptop costs.
Sure. I think the view of some people, the alternate view is that it's an alternative to a laptop. For people who don't need the specific areas in which a laptop excels, they prefer the areas in which an iPad excels, it is a legitimate alternative to it.
That's
but
kind
it
of what
have
I
to
say.
Do everything that a laptop has if to you do in order to be legitimate.
If there's an app you use, maybe it's Lightroom, that sings and you'd rather use the iPad for it than a laptop, then that's a good choice for you. But it isn't. I'm sure you said this. It isn't a replacement for a full laptop. If the things you do make sense. I think it's more an adjunct. I think Apple's intent is completely normal. Is that you buy the Apple Watch, the iPhone, the iPad, and a laptop, and maybe an iMac too, and that way
also
you'll have everything you need.
And I use this example way too much, but there's a bunch of people for whom those traditional computers, and it's a large market, have just never been accessible to them. They've been confusing, really smart people who've been made to feel less than because they didn't understand terminals or file systems or just the paradigms that have grown up through geeky computer science hippies that Andy mentioned at the beginning, now to a massive mainstream audience and to a large segment of the market. And I think that's where you see the sales numbers for iPad. This is a computing device that does not have to be a traditional computer or a laptop, and they prefer it that way.
We've talked about this a couple of times, but where you really see that is the under 10 and over 60 range. When you're in an airport, those are all iPads, or all tablets. And there's a bunch of us in the middle of that. That are using computers, but it's like it is a replacement for a large portion.
Was Steven Sinofsky's contention, is that we only think it's not a full computer because we have preconceived notions. Well,
and we're the generation that has spent a lot of time on a computer. So we 10 to or maybe even I would say 15.
Maybe
to,
we're the
to
last 60. Generation that wants a command line, or the last generation that wants to use a mouse to edit text. Or
remember,
maybe
the
we're the last generation that wants to
out?
Actually write computer code. But we still want to do those things.
But I think that but my kids are learning my kids are learning Swift on their iPad. And they're typing away, and eventually Swift is going to be there. I mean, I think that, for instance, we're in an evolution. This is one step towards that computer. I mean, I think that when we look at like Final Cut. They made an announcement last week. I think it was last week that basically Final Cut is not going. They said it's going to be. So they're going to support the Avid formats and some of the other formats for Mojave. Don't expect to be supported any further than Mojave. For your video formats.
Yeah.
Now, if I were building an iOS if I was going to build an iOS version or an ARM version of a laptop or an iOS version of Final Cut, that's exactly what I would tell you. In the future. So I think that there is we're looking at an evolution here of, this may not be there yet, but I now probably spend 50% of my time on my iPad. I mean, since I got the newer one, I admit that I'm experimenting with that process, but I'm finding myself much happier. If I'm in a meeting, I don't take my laptop anymore. I just take my laptop. Yeah. If I'm having a meeting, I don't take my laptop. If there are things that I still need to do on it, stuff like OmniGraffle and other things like that, I'm still using, and obviously Final Cut and those types of things. But I'm finding myself more and more happy with that. And part of it's just forcing myself to do it. As soon as I force myself to, I'm just going to use my iPad for this because I know that it can do it, I immediately find that, this is much nicer, and I can now draw in the middle of my notes, and I can, the note-taking apps are not perfect, but I think that they're getting much better.
The other thing, like, to me, is the biggest symbol, the biggest sign of all of this is that at the same event, Apple introduced an iPad Pro and a MacBook Air because they realize that there are different segments of the market and both those products will be hugely attractive to different people. And the sort of part where I have a problem is if you say, if you can't do all your work on an iPad Pro, then you're just a dummy and you're not trying. Or if you say, like, there was this huge controversy, and I won't name any names, but it's all over Twitter for the last 4 days. Very popular tech media company and some of their people basically said, if you use an iPad Pro, then you're not doing effing real work. And I think that's hugely insulting.
Wait a minute, name names. Who the hell said that?
No, it's on Twitter. I don't want to, but it's just
look,
not.
I'm looking on Twitter, and if I
don't
find
do
it,
Twitter,
I'm
missing out, I guess.
Yeah, no, and I think that, you know, but their work may be different than yours. They might be a real estate agent, an architect. They might be the illustrator doing all the stuff for Star Trek. They might be there's so many people, DJs, musicians, who are doing amazing work. And just because it's not your work does not mean it is invalid.
Well, I completely grant you that. That's why I want to know who said that.
And we should not underestimate. They haven't really talked as much about it, but the partnerships Apple has built with Salesforce and IBM have yielded huge returns. You know, and so when you're talking about salespeople and a lot of business organizations,
Microsoft's selling to, they call them first line workers. Microsoft's really pushing its effectively tablet version of Windows to first line workers, even the ones with ARM processors that are really slow because they don't have the same needs.
Right.
And it's something they hold in their hand as they're checking in people at a gate.
But it's not even just that. It's like sales folks. I definitely have had people in my company that have just decided they're using iPads because they're not doing the technical end, and they're totally 100% iPad. You know, so it's definitely possible. You know, to do all of that.
Okay, I've found the tweet, but unfortunately, it uses profanity, and I can't read it.
Yeah.
Tom Warren from The Verge says, I'm quoting his tweet here, Neelay made this point on VergeCast. I have not listened to that show, so I'm not going to comment on something I didn't listen to. But the people who have replaced their laptops with the iPad are people who do flick all work. The rest of us hardworking people use a laptop because we have real stuff to do.
Is this Tom quoting Neelay or is this...
This is Tom responding to Neelay, or paraphrasing.
So it was Neelay who said it. But see, that's Neelay right there. That's the same. That's how he wants to be. He wants to generate that kind of traffic. It's the same reason he said that taking away the headphone jack is a hostile anti-consumer move, right? A user hostile move. It's hyperbole in the service of a point.
Okay, but I think it's representative of a certain look. To be fair,
I have used those exact words that I believe taking away a headphone jack, unless it's impossible to include one, is hostile.
Well, he was right about that. I'll grant him on that one. But I think the point being that Neelay likes to use strong language.
Yeah, but I think it's representative of a certain segment of the tech community who kind of, like, it's like anyone who lives north than you is a northerner. Anyone who does different work than you is not a pro. Like, oh, you're just not a pro. And it's sort of like, how dare Apple take fire from the gods and make it accessible to a bunch of other people. Right. And I want to push back on that because these people are doing work they could never do before. And it is every bit as professional. It's just different.
And also, let's also point out that if someone has $300 to $400 to spend on a really good computing solution, let's cut through the controversy by simply saying referring to something as a computing solution. They're going to get a lot more value from what I've seen out of a $329 iPad than they will out of any $300 and $400 Windows notebook, and many but not all $300 to $400 Chromebooks. So, and it will cover everything that they want to do. The earlier that as adults we can glom onto one of these really important topics, the better the rest of your life and the lives of everybody you interact with will be. Don't give people crap for liking the things that they like, the things that are working for them. If anything, have them explain to you how excited they are and why they're happy with this thing that you want to hold by one corner because you think it's a filthy thing that was swept out of some sort of a grease trap. It's so horrible, because you'll learn something at least about either about that hardware or about how other people use technology. I'm not commenting on this tweet. I want to really make it clear. I'm not commenting on this tweet, but I'm saying that personally, speaking only for myself, I think that I do a better job the better I understand how other people use technology, that my expectations for Andy Anatko's work are not necessarily or universally applicable to how other people approach their work or their goals.
When I grew up on a farm and we all had trucks. Like everybody has a truck. Everybody's got a truck, and you can't understand how you could live without a household with a truck that doesn't, that you can't put stuff in the back of. You
know, anybody who drives a truck is doing F all work.
And that's kind of how we viewed it. I mean, you know, like,
that's true.
I mean, the only thing that we
in
had
a certain
that,
area, that's true.
There's a lot of, you know, we've got to remember the Ford F-150 is one of the top selling cars in the United States. So, you know, there's a lot of us out there that need to haul things. We need to put things in the back. We need to, you know, But my mom didn't need to drive a truck around, no. You know, and she had, you know, but when we grew up and I started driving a truck when I was 10, you know, like, and so it was mostly not on the road, a little on the road. So you know, I think that we looked at it as something you had to have, and no one had a household that didn't have a truck. Not everyone drove a truck, but it was something that you all had. You know, and because there are things to do with it. And I think in the same way, we look at computers as, you know, the laptop to me is still the same way Steve Jobs said it. It's still the truck. You know, like there's heavy lifting that needs to be done by a laptop or an iMac or those things. But I really do feel like the iPads have become kind of the cars and the
isn't that what Jobs said?
The phone has become kind of the motorcycle. Yep.
Yeah, motorcycle. I like it. A Vespa, maybe, depending on which one you get.
And a Chromebook's an SUV, and Surface is like a minivan.
I like the iPad. I think the iPad, especially the pricing. Well, no, because there's a 329, so I shouldn't say that. But in general, it's kind of like, for most people, I think it will be kind of like your, not your only computer, but a second.
What I'm finding more and more is that I really just enjoy using it. Like
I also find myself frustrated. Just doing email, just doing simple stuff, I find myself frustrated.
I find myself frustrated with my MacBook because I keep on touching the screen and nothing happens.
True.
And I'm just like, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no apology needed, Renee. That's a secondary updated review.
Yeah, and I did list a lot of what I think are still roadblocks to iOS, and I didn't want to give – I think one of the biggest problems in tech support, and I've said this before, is people tell you the solutions they want rather than the problems that they have, and quite often there are better solutions than they've thought of, and there are things that I have problems with. Like I can move photos and videos in and out, but not audio files or documents or anything like that over a direct connection. And there's just a small list of things that I just keep hitting up against. And I think
Apple will fix those? I mean, all of those can be fixed in software. Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think iOS 12 was supposed to have quite a big iPad component, and it got pushed back to 13 because they did all that performance. Like, they literally took the best engineers at the company and said, make performance amazing. And that person couldn't fix performance issues and do all the new iPad stuff. So they had to push that off till this year. So I think in iOS 13, we'll see a lot of that sort of come. There's an Earth One where Jay Garrick has an iPad Pro that has marvelous software on it. It just, we didn't get it on this Earth this year.
Yeah. What would I mean? This is kind of speculative, and I know Renee, you got to go in about 10 minutes or less. But
I got till 4:30. I got till 1:30.
Okay, good. Thanks. Another 23 minutes. But what would you do? I'll ask all of you to the iPad and to iOS to make it. I guess if you think it's everything it needs to be, your answer would be zero. But if it's not, what would you do?
I made a list of six things for that video. And one is that, you know, you can't plug in a drive and take off anything other than video and image files. And you should be able to import, export anything. When you're using a keyboard, there's no way to navigate without taking your hands off the keyboard.
That's my big one.
And that context switching is bad. Yeah. Loading web pages, you get the iPhone version. Like, you go to Reddit and you get the iPhone version of Reddit on an iPad. And whether it's like a forced desktop version or just a different declarative class for iPad Safari, but it is Safari. It should just be allowed to be Safari. And because I podcast, selfishly, I just want multi-track recording the way we have video recording. Also, you can't deploy App Store apps using an iPad for iPad. And I think if you look at Adobe's approach where they take, it's real Photoshop, it's not full Photoshop, but it's real Photoshop. And if you had real but not full Xcode with some sort of online managed environment and developers could at least access their apps and work on subsets of their projects, that would be tremendous. And the last one is that I still can't just lend my iPad to somebody. And I believe Apple was working on a guest board. I don't know what the status of it is, but just being able to hand off my iPad to a different user and have like iCloud user accounts. Those six things would make And of course, yeah, I want Final Cut for iPad, but just those six things by themselves would make it infinitely usable for me.
Yeah, I think for me, the number one thing is mouse. Like I can't, there's just a lot of precision where I need to have the cursor in one place and I need to be able to see what I'm doing while I'm doing it with the cursor. And there are things that I'm doing with applications that require a level of precision that I can't get with the iPad. And I think that's the thing that keeps me, that's when I go back, because I've been measuring that, is like, when do I go back to my laptop? Well, when I go back to my laptop, if I need to use a mouse or a trackpad.
Yeah.
Renee really hit it on the head. We could have written the exact same piece. The number one thing is some sort, I won't say necessarily a trackpad or a mouse, but an alternative way of being able to interact with the user interface without necessarily having to reach up and touch the screen, because the very, very, very best apps that are out there have brilliant multi-touch vocabularies. But also, if you're really doing lots of super productive screen things, the glass screen, the glass keyboard isn't going to do for it. I really think it is as some sort of a way of adding trackpad support. But if they were to come up with something that was just as good, that would be perfectly fine by me. And also, if all they did was have the Files app, give the Files app the sole power in the entire platform to simply mount a file system through USB. If I always had to go to Files in order to take this USB key thing that I've got that someone just handed me, or take this SD card and basically have it have the Files app look at it, say that okay, this is NTFS, I can deal with NTFS. Okay, this is a Mac file system, I can deal with a Mac file system. I don't see that there's anything wrong with this file. I'm going to let this appear to Files, and then I'm going to let the Files share it to other apps that can see that. That would also solve all of these like three times a year, but absolutely brings a workflow to a crushing halt problems. And the third thing is I would love to see Apple be able to at least to consider different form factors for the iPad. The idea of a screen and a keyboard separated by a hinge is a super powerful concept that I would love to see Apple do some work on. And I know that there are really great third-party alternatives out there, but they almost all use Bluetooth, and Bluetooth is not nearly as good as having an innate connection between the two things. And also the fact that there are so many really sophisticated and well-developed third-party solutions to making an iPad work like a laptop only underscores how many people want to use the iPad in a physical form factor the way that a laptop works. So they're solvable problems. I wonder if Apple is capable of just dogmatically creating a trackpad interface to an iPad. I feel as though this is like a Catholic in the 1950s eating meat on Fridays. There's nothing stopping them from doing that, but dogmatically it is a repugnant idea and they just don't see any reason why they would want to do that, which would be kind of sad.
I should point out before we get the emails, there is a trackpad on the on-screen keyboard. If you press and hold, you
can. Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like what Andy mentioned. Like they have Focus UI on Apple TV. Like, again, I hate presenting solutions, but Apple TV has Focus UI. And you can imagine a world where there are arrow keys and a capacitive touch bar, space bar that you can use to manipulate it.
All of these things make it more complex, though, right? And I think Apple doesn't want to make it more complex. Well,
I don't think it makes it more complex.
They have a trackpad in software.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
but the trackpad's only for like text selection. It's not as though you can navigate between apps and do things like that.
On Apple TV, they do because you use this. I mean, they have all these. That's the part to me.
I do think
they have all these things.
Trackpad.
It is. There may be this dogmatic thing going on. For instance, the things that I have problems with are easily fixed by Apple, like the fact that the Apple Folio keyboard doesn't light up. It's like,
yeah,
that's kind of bad. But it feels like they intentionally didn't do that. And I know that Bridge or Logitech and others will make keyboards that light up, but Apple's does not. It's other things like in Apple News, and this is completely personal, but my workflow is to bookmark the stories as I'm reading the news. There's no easy way. The share sheet doesn't offer that. There's no easy way for me to do that. It makes Apple News impossible for my workflow. And actually, Google News does work, although it takes an extra step.
Didn't they have a star or something that you could tap along the bottom? Did they take that away? Because I don't have it in Canada. I have to double check.
I don't know. It doesn't. Maybe I'm not looking in the right place. But the issue for what I want to do is something I can do easily on a laptop in a browser, which is be reading a news story and then bookmark it in Pinboard, which is where I put the stories we're going to cover. And that I've found that impossible to do in Apple News. But I don't think it's – I think it's honestly because they want to keep it simple. They don't want to – you know, it's not that they can't. It's not that they can't put a lighted keyboard on the – but for some reason, dogmatically, they have a sense of what this should be.
They have Apple has a point of view, and that's something that I absolutely value them for. It's just that sometimes their point of view differs from my own. And unfortunately, I can't fault them and praise them for the same thing. They have a good idea in their head of what an iPad is and what it isn't. My opinion is that sometimes that limits the potential of what they could do with this platform, but it also means that we're not going to have the iPad Centris 640 versus the iPad Centris 670C version that are kind of similar, but not really. I do like the fact that iOS is really one ecosystem that can buy one app that works on pretty much everything and gives me the same experience. But like I said, there's potential here that if Apple forgot that they ever talked about the toaster oven, the toaster fridge, and decided that a fridge with a water dispenser and an ice maker, though, that's something. Maybe you're not actually complicating things with features, but you're actually enhancing something in a way that people will actually like.
Apple, I thought they discontinued the Think capsule or the Time capsule in the airport long ago, but apparently they announced that they weren't doing any new development long ago. Now they don't even sell it. So, which is too bad because there's still people who love that thing, and it isn't that far out of date or anything. I just think
compared to that was a mercy killing because so many companies have been doing so much great work that went so far past what Apple was doing, and it wasn't stuff that Apple couldn't do. It's just that they really weren't interested in doing with their own networking products what like makers of mesh products were doing, or even just what makers of a modern Wi-Fi base station were doing. I call it mercy killing because I shudder to think about all the people who were just thought that, well, I'm in the Apple store, I need a Wi-Fi base station, the Apple version must be the best one since I'm also buying this MacBook and also buying this Mac Mini. It's like, oh no, you're essentially buying a 2015 Wi-Fi router, and now we've got warp engines and we've got holodecks, and you're still like on impulse power. That's for the same amount of money.
Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. If you are ready, you've been listening, and you're ready to step up to a new iPhone or a new iPad, why not sell your old stuff, get cash for it, and then buy the new device? Gazelle is the trusted online marketplace for buying and selling used electronics. Really all started with selling. It's a great place to go to find, it still is, to find out what your device is worth. You get a quote right away. Shipping is free, payment is fast, and they don't just take iPhones. They take Samsung phones, they take iPads, they take a lot of it. So go to gazelle.com and get a quote at least, find out. Now, if you're looking, that's to sell, but if you're looking to buy, they also have, and this is a great thing for kid, you know, who might, you know, not be as careful with the phone as you'd like, or maybe you weren't and you need a new replacement, get a pre-owned device, but it's certified. You choose the quality. They have iPhone 6 through 10, iPad Airs, standards, minis, iPad Pros, you bet. They have MacBook Air and Pro. They even cater to Android users with a variety of Samsung Galaxy phones. It's a great place to get a device fully inspected, backed, of course, by a 30-day return policy. They work on all the major carriers, but they're sold without contract. And you can even finance it. They have a firm right at checkout, so you can get it instantly approved and pay it off in 3, 6, or 12 months. So it's a really simple way to do it by selecting financing with a firm at checkout. Gazelle.com. You don't have to pay top dollar for a great device, and you probably would like to get top dollar for your old device. You can do both at gazelle.com. Here's the deal. Give new life to used devices, trade them in for cash, or buy a certified pre-owned device, or in my opinion, do both. Gazelle. Gazelle.com. Sell your gadgets the fast and simple way with gazelle.com. Tim Cook, interview with Axios. said some interesting things, including this about bro culture in Silicon Valley. Oh, wait a minute. I thought I had the video. Here we go. The bro culture in Silicon Valley. Well, I would have the audio. I'm probably doing something wrong. Let me start again.
You worry about the male-dominated culture out here.
I think the Valley has been open and accepting to many different people from different walks of life. But I agree 100% from a gender point of view that the Valley has missed it. And tech in general has missed it. I know for one, we spend a lot of energy on this and are constantly asking ourselves, how can we improve more, and listening to what our folks tell us. And I got to believe other people are doing this too. And so I'm actually encouraged at this point that there will be more marked improvement over time.
I wonder if Johnny Ive told Tim to wear frames that match his eyes, because that's a good that's a good look. You can see the entire interview tonight on HBO on Axios.
There's a thing called tripods.
I didn't want to say, but yeah, that's.
It was a little shaky cam.
That's their style, though.
That's their style. Yeah, no, that's their style.
It's
obviously,
a style that goes along with a beard and a rolled up jeans, and
they're trying to compete with Vice, right?
No, Vice doesn't even do that. I don't think it doesn't do it that bad.
It's harder to watch.
For those of you listening, it was easy to listen to. Nice audio. Also asked about regulation, he said, I'm a big believer in the free market, but we have to admit, when the free market is not working, and it hasn't worked here, I think it's inevitable there'll be some level of regulation. I think all of Silicon Valley is kind of holding their breath and tiptoeing around, waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Well, I think that Silicon Valley hasn't proven that they can regulate themselves. I mean, they're trying, but they haven't. You know, the problem is that you have companies that they're making a lot of money. And it's not just that they're making a lot of money. It's not just that they're getting rich. You just have to remember that for a company, they do have to consider this thing called payroll. Like we own companies, there's a thing called payroll. And so changing your business model dramatically is not something that you can just do, especially when you have tens of thousands of employees, even if you have hundreds or even tens of employees. You can't just decide you're going to pivot, you know? And so for them, they have a lot of money coming in that is related to the thing that people are complaining about. And I guarantee they're back there trying to figure out how to engineer their way out of it, but they can't just decide, okay, this month we're not going to do that anymore, because that's bringing in billions of dollars. And that's how you pay for everything. And so I think that we have to understand that that's the issue, but them struggling with that is taking longer than most people are patient for. So they have to move faster, but we also have to understand that there are business reasons to continue to work.
Well, also part of the problem is that Google and Facebook and Twitter particularly, when they designed their service and when they created their corporate culture, they were not creating an infrastructure for news and communication globally. They were creating a fun and wacky way to send pictures of your pets and kids to friends and share links. And so now that they find themselves in that terrible position, it's kind of like a car manufacturer that suddenly finds themselves making pizzas. Because they don't understand, conceptually, they don't, institutionally, they don't understand that if you're selling food, the kitchen has to be clean 100% of the time, that it doesn't matter that you have standing inventory of a perishable item, you have to throw it out, you can't just keep using it. That's the analogy that I think really works here. They don't institutionally know how to run a basic infrastructure where if you screw things up in the simplest of ways, we're not just talking about a couple of people get their feelings hurt, or even a couple of people get killed. Genocide can be powered by a lack of attention to what people are doing with your platform, and they are absolutely not set up to do that. So this is why they are running so far behind the requirements of what needs to be done to maintain Twitter and Facebook and Google as potentially instruments of good, as opposed to just this horrible, horrible thing, this stick that anybody can grab for free and hit anybody over the head with.
Cook says regulation is inevitable of the tech industry. He also says the tech industry shouldn't eschew it. He says that regulation is not necessarily the enemy of innovation. That you can have both. And so
the only thing I'll say about that is that he'll talk about it. He's talking about it in the context of privacy, or the people's lack of privacy. But does he think it's inevitable if they decide to say we have to have a back door to?
Yeah, that's the kind of inevitable that.
But I'm just saying that there's really dangerous talk, you know, to talk about that process of saying, you know, we think that the government should step in because the government can step in on a whole bunch of different sides of this conversation.
I think he's talking about privacy more than
he is. But I'm just saying that it's. Yeah, yeah. They are fighting off regulation in other areas. You know, with some of the stuff the governments want to do.
A part that I thought was really good on Twitter when you addressed this was when Georgia said that Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg, they just keep saying, "We didn't know, we didn't know, we didn't know."
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, I didn't know my kid broke that window, but you still have to pay for that window. And if you didn't know your kid is breaking all the windows, then that becomes negligence at some point. And if you own a window repair company, then it starts to be a little bit malicious malevolent or something like that. And that's, I think, the part that's going to bite them in the butt is that they keep playing the same dodge, deflect, oh, we didn't know, aw, shucks game. And that opens up a huge vulnerability.
Well, and I will say that these companies are really big. I don't think we understand like the scale of these companies. There is no way he would know or she would know.
But you don't say that. Like, that's not the
response. I know, but I'm just saying that there's like the you know, it would be obvious. But I think we think of our little companies. There's no way a company that size that they would know what communications firm was being used to manage something like that. That is like three layers down from them to make that decision. And it's absurd that we would think that they would know, that they would be in those conversations.
It can't be the answer to everything. Okay, well, that's the answer to that, but it's the answer to everything.
It's not the answer. I think that we think that they're making every decision there. And you know, there's this thing called delegation that happens in these companies. There's tens of thousands of people making decisions, and those decisions aren't being made by that person. You know, that person's making very high level decisions of we need to move down this direction. You know, I don't think that. I'm not saying they have to fix what they're doing. I mean, and that was a crazy idea to hire that firm to do that. So someone needs to be, you know, that needs to be sorted. I'm not saying that it's a bad decision, but to assume that people at the very top are making decisions that granular would be absurd.
Sandberg did take responsibility for hiring them. She said she knew.
Well,
I don't care.
She said she should have known.
I recuse myself from Facebook discussions because I've done what any sane person should do, which is get Facebook out of their lives. It's clearly a rogue company, in my opinion.
Again, there's institutional character, and it was not surprising to me that their reaction to this over the course of the past 2 years has not been, there's a problem, it doesn't matter how it happened, it's our response. We are in a position where we can fix it, and it's also our responsibility to fix it. Their position is going to start and end with, it's not our fault. We got to make sure we deflect attention away, even if it means that we have to put other stories into play that make Google and Apple and Twitter look bad. That is unfortunately, that's the character of Facebook. I would also have to, with regret, say that Facebook still has something that no one else can provide, which is if there is no place else on the entire internet where if I say that, oh, by the way, I'm going to be in the hospital for 2 weeks having life-saving surgery. that everybody will, if I tweet that, all my readers and listeners will like, oh my God, I hope things work out well. If I put it pictures on Flickr, no one will find out about it. If I put it on Facebook, that's the only way that I should have picked a more uplifting thing, but like that's the only place where unfortunately all of my friends who are not deep, deep, deep nerds. And more importantly than that, all of my family members are. So if I want to find out how my niece did in a basketball game, I have to go onto Facebook to find that. And I don't know that I did make the decision a few years ago that I hate Facebook. I don't think that they're trustworthy. I'm going to limit the amount of the amount of information I give them. But if I don't want to cut myself off from those kind of interactions, I'm going to have to. I feel as though that transaction is with great regret worthwhile.
Renee has to run. So before you go, Renee, yes. I would like to give you I'd like to ask you one question. Should I buy my mom AirPods or wait for an update for Christmas?
I mean, there's always, again, Apple has released products in December before. They released a smart
unlikely
battery case
will,
in December,
though, right? Yeah.
But it is unlikely. And the last rumors I heard was like a springtime.
Okay.
And right now, AirPods are in stock more than they've ever been before. They've always been sort
that's
of in a shortage.
Sign.
They're in stock and there's amazing deals on them.
Well, that's the second question. Apple's event begins the 23rd. That's all they'll say right now. Historically, Apple has not given us great deals on Black Friday.
No.
Should we worry? Should we wait? Should I mean, I'm not going to buy anything till Black Friday anyway, but
I did a video on this last week, and like Best Buy is going to do $100 off HomePod. There's going to be a bunch of sales
that's
on AirPods.
Get some deals.
There's going to be so Best Buy, Amazon, those sort of traditional retailers are always your best bet. And if you miss one, don't worry, because it's not Black Friday anymore. It's like Black-vember Fest.
November.
It's like a whole month and a half of sales. There will be another one, so just keep an eye out, and you'll probably find one.
You have a few
one.
Seconds. Is there a pick you wanted to give us before you leave?
Oh, the new Hue Play lights. I've got them on behind me right now. I replaced the Blooms with those. They're hard to find in stock everywhere, and I think Best Buy has an exclusive, so you can't get them on Amazon in the U.S., but you can get them on Amazon in other countries. But they are great. You can put them on your TV, behind your TV, horizontal, vertical, and they just pump out whatever color light you want.
Renee, get out of here. You're great.
Thank you guys so much.
iMore.com. Renee
happy
Ritchie.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, happy
Cheers.
Thanksgiving. Well,
thank you so
have
much.
A happy Thursday. It's just going to be a regular Thursday for you. Do Canadians celebrate Black Friday? Because that makes no sense.
We do now. Thanks, America.
Have a great
Everyone
Black Friday,
money,
Cyber
Leo.
Monday, Giving Tuesday, and I'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Thank you guys. Have fun.
Let's take a break, and then I'll get Andy and Alex's pick of the week. But first, a word in honor of Renee from our Canadian friends at FreshBooks. FreshBooks is actually a great site. Ridiculously easy to use. Cloud accounting. I don't even want to use the word accounting because that sounds like it's going to be scary. But it's not. What it really it does is it does the accounting software kind of automatically behind the scenes while you do what you want to do. You're the small business owner. You're in charge of your business. You continue to do business and let FreshBooks do the hard stuff. It starts with invoices. You know, you got to send those out. Let FreshBooks send professional-looking invoices. It's easy to create them in seconds. And you can always see with those invoices when not only in their FreshBooks dashboard when they were sent, but also when they were viewed by your client, when they were paid, if they're not paid, which ones are overdue. So there you go. By just doing that, you've got your accounts receivable. Oh, don't tell anybody you're doing accounting. You're sending out invoices. That's all. Incidentally, because the minute you sign up for FreshBooks, you can accept online payments. That's part of the FreshBooks deal. You're going to get paid an average of twice as fast. Turns out your client hates paying bills as much as you hate making bills, sending bills. So if there's a button that says, pay Leo now, they're going to push that button. Just get it out of the way so you get paid twice as fast. So there you go. And you can also now, let's see, that's expenses. Yeah, easy to get the expenses into FreshBooks. Take a picture with the FreshBooks app of the receipt. Boom, it's in there. It can go into the invoice, which makes it very simple. In fact, they'll even import expenses directly from your bank account every day if you set it up to do that. That's part of it. It's an easy deal. Let's see. So that's accounts receivable. That's expenses. I think, and then revenue just by based on paid in, I think you pretty much got, yes, true industry standard accounting, and you didn't do anything except stuff you do anyway. And you can generate and access real accounting reports, general ledger, trial balance. You could share those reports with your accountant or financial advisor. It'll impress them. They'll say, wow, you're really doing a good job on those books. That's great. Pretty impressive. Oh, yeah, it's just, you know, I'm good at this. I'm good. But you're not spending any extra time at all. You're doing your business. You're doing your thing, the stuff you love. Let FreshBooks do the stuff you don't. They add features all the time. It's a web-based app, so you can create proposals with rich text content and images. You'll now be able to accept e-signatures in those proposals from your clients. That's awesome. You can send invoices, estimates, and proposals in multiple languages and multiple currencies. That's what saved my life when I was billing Canada. I was billing Rogers in Canada and Canadian dollars, and I kind of just hated having to figure that all out. They just do it automatically. FreshBooks has a mobile app, as I mentioned, lets you keep tab on your business no matter where you are. And they're always adding new stuff. You can search for uncategorized expenses, for instance. Something I always wanted to do. Have I categorized everything? Then just do a search. You can find them all. Save time, automate more of your workflow. They have more than 70 apps and integrations with FreshBooks, more than 70 different third-party applications, like Everlance, for instance. With Everlance, you can maximize deductions, automatically capture every work mile. They've got bulk actions. You can easily delete businesses under your account. You don't have to contact support to do it. And if there's anything you don't understand, not only do they have the best support team, these nice Canadian folks, but they've got great Learning Hub videos you can watch. Although, I got to tell you, it's so intuitive. You're not probably going to need to watch those videos, but they're there if you need them. End the year on a high note. Hit the ground running in 2019. Let's do it all with FreshBooks. Join the 24 million people, including me, who've used FreshBooks to painlessly send invoices, track time, capture expenses. You'll always know whether you've made money or lost money at any given time with FreshBooks. FreshBooks, try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. If you do me a favor, though, in the How Did You Hear About Us section, please put MacBreak Weekly. I just want to make sure that we get credit for it. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. Andy and Notco, your pick of the week, my friend.
A couple of tips, because you're probably going to hear this early enough before you do your Thanksgiving cooking and or baking. I just want to share two or three tips that I have considered game changers over the past 10 or 15 years. One of which is crispy turkey skin. Take it off the turkey and make turkey cracklins or like turkey chips. Ooh. Instead. You take the skin off while it's still raw. Okay. You basically put it on the put a parchment paper over a cookie sheet, put the turkey skin on there. If you want to season it a little bit, that's fine, but it's even fine just as is. Another sheet of parchment paper and then like a heavy pot on top of it, put it into like a 375 degree preheated oven for half hour, and you wind and serve on the table this basket of like cracked just chips of turkey. Or if you're the household where you don't pass around a platter, you basically plates get passed forward and someone slices, everyone gets like a turkey chip. It's the most wonderful thing ever. It's almost worth like buying extra turkeys and giving the cats all of the turkey meat just to have extra of these chips. And it's guaranteed crispy turkey skin because you cook the skin separately. The other two tips have to do with making cookies. I'm the cookie person in the family. Two game changers are to I'm making chocolate chip and oatmeal this year. You probably have seen people like use an ice cream scoop to make sure the portions are absolutely identical. That's nice too. But what you want to do is you want to do it the night before. Make your dough. To use the ice cream scoop to make these like half domes of dough, put them on a baking sheet and put them in the freezer overnight, because not only does that improve the flavor, but also the next day, that's how you get like nice, thick, chewy cookies instead of like spread out or lumpy and crumpy things. It defrosts and cooks while it bakes. And also it makes it so much easier that you're just reaching into the kitchen for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 half domes, put them on the sheet, bake them, go back in the freezer, 1, 2, 3, 4, and that way you can easily like make fresh cookies that morning without having to be up all night. And then particularly with like a chocolate or really, really sweet cookie, put some sea salt or some kosher salt on the top of each one before you bake them. They don't know where that extra hit of flavor is coming from, but oh my God, it is a game changer. So
I gotta write this all down. I really like the one. I'm trying with Thanksgiving. I have so much cooking to do. Like yesterday, I made all the lasagnas. I want to bit by bit cook everything. Yep. And then pop it all in the oven at the end. This is one of my tips. I used Apple's reminders and notepad to make a timeline. I'll have to ask Stacy tomorrow. She did a Gantt. But I have three ovens. She made a Gantt chart. But I have a June oven and an upper oven and a lower oven. And I have a lot of stuff to do at all these different temperatures. And I had to use, I made a timeline. So now on Thursday, 9 a.m., starting at 9 a.m., I'm going to know exactly what to put in when at what temperature. And I've got it all figured out. I have to add cookies because that's a good idea. I like
That's one of the really great wins of a sous vide. People talk about it for cooking, but it's also beautiful for reheating because like mashed potatoes, make them a day or two before and then just reheat them. Most vegetables, when it comes to like green beans, I can either have the choice of making beautiful, like fully done green beans 2 days before with almonds and the dressing and everything. everything, and then reheat them. Or I can do just plain boil them and then shock them, butter them, and throw them into a dish on the morning of. It's a, because the sous vide, it's not like nuclear microwaving something or like putting something in the stove so they all dry out. It really is. If it's a moist wet sort of thing, stuffing, potatoes, things with sauces, it actually will come back right back to life, right back to temperature.
How long do you sous vide the potatoes for? Like an hour?
I cook them normally, and I just reheat them at 165 usually, because people like really, really hot potatoes. The only thing, 165 is my usual like reheat so that they're piping hot temperature. However, if there's meat in there, like a chicken or a turkey or whatever, something that's already cooked. We're talking about reheating. Right. Sometimes I forget that if at 165, now you're continuing the cooking process,
right,
and the chicken or the pork that you cooked that was perfect at 140 is now like a little bit tougher and a little bit drier and not quite so nice.
If I could get a sous vide that would hold a 16-pound ham, I would be golden.
plus a vacuum bag about the size of a hefty bag.
I could put, actually, that's really all I'm missing, because I could put an ANOVA in a giant tub.
I use that for ribs.
In a cooler.
A cooler or something, and I could fit the ham in there, but I need a vacuum bag that's the size of a 16-pound turkey. It's in a bag now, or a ham. It's in a bag now. I wonder if it's sealed. It's probably sealed, right?
Yeah,
Can you just throw those bags right in a sous vide?
I have. I take things that are vacuum packed, and I've taken all kinds of things that are vacuum packed, and I just throw them in. Like I've taken like steaks that are already marinated or whatever, and just
that's a good tip. Trader Joe's does some really nice marinated tri-tip in a sealed bag, and I just throw those in. Yeah,
I do.
Yeah,
I don't even take the label off.
Yeah, the label usually doesn't come off. You'd want to be careful about that getting sucked up into the ANOVA,
but
it doesn't come off.
It doesn't come off. It doesn't. Yeah, it's not a
good tip, Andy. Thank you.
By the way, if you want to make a conversation piece out of those the chocolate chip cookies, if you've ever made onigiri, which is it's like a rice ball that has in a triangle, there's a little form you can get on Amazon that forms the triangle, you know, for the onigiri. It makes a great form for chocolate chip cookies. You know, it's just different. You know, you just have you're making chocolate chip cookies that are triangular, and you can press it. You basically stick it in. I don't know about that one, but there's ones that have a press from the top, and you can just press down on it, and it'll form it into this nice little triangle.
How about this?
Yeah, I think that one is
$6.99. Yeah. We're both on Amazon right now.
Can I get it by tomorrow? No.
It just gives you a absurd
triangle.
There's no good reason, but it's triangular cookies, and they're exactly the same.
Actually, if you search Amazon
kitties and pandas.
If you search Amazon for cookie molds, you're going to find a lot better than triangles.
I know, true. But it's just there's something. The triangles are anyway. They're nice.
Yeah. That's cool. About maybe those? Yeah. This cookies like that say "Eat me." How about?
And the bonus is you can make onigiri with it, which is amazing.
Yeah. How about making your cookies look like walnuts? Huh? Those are Russian. Andy would recognize those.
What was I thinking?
Russian cookie pastry.
I have a nephew with a deadly nut allergy. So I could start like a really, really bad argument by saying, do you really think that I wouldn't know? They're cookies in the shape of walnuts. Why would you even try to fool us with cookies shaped of almonds? Well, I just thought it would be kind of funny. That's why I don't do Christmas. goodbye.
For him, get dinosaurs.
There you go.
Dinosaur cookie molds. He's not allergic to the dinosaur, is he?
Nobody's allergic to dinosaurs.
Alex Lindsay, pick of the week.
So I had a reverse pick a couple months ago with the NPR app, because they took away the playlist.
Very
upset, and I was, you know, my whole equilibrium had been kind of thrown off. And so I'm returning back to pick the NPR app, because they have added the playlist back into the app. Not only have they added it back into the app, but it is better than it was before.
That was a great feature, because you could basically line up all the shows you wanted to listen to and get in the car for a long trip.
Which I was doing every day.
Yeah.
And then I stopped and literally just kind of went NPR-less, you know, for a long time.
Because I just
didn't want to. NPR has, in my opinion, has a lot of fat. In the standard morning, in afternoon, there's just a lot of things I don't care about. And so they're about every two or three are like, I don't want to listen to that. So having to skip through them was just kind of a pain. And I also like to reorder things. Like, oh, I think this is these are more important stories that if I don't get through all of them, I want to make sure to listen to these ones and I want to rearrange them. And so that's all back. It's all possible in the NPR app. And the best thing that they added is that now when you're in the playlist, one of the things that you had to do before is that you had to go to the story and then add it to the playlist, which is a pain in the neck because once I see the title, I know whether I want to listen to it or not. I don't need to read any more description. And so they've added the little check mark now that's on the list. So if you open up All Things Considered or if you open up Morning Edition or Weekend Edition or whatever, they you can now have you have the little check mark right by the title. And it, I know it seems like a little thing, but if you're building a playlist, it's a real it's a real time saver if you're doing it every day. And so it's actually better than it was before. It's a great addition, and I'm back to listening to my NPR every day. And it's pretty much, you know, I listen to a lot of different news sources because I think you should. I don't think you should trust any one source, but kind of the backbone of knowing what's going on each day is usually listening to Morning Edition and All Things Considered and Marketplace. Marketplace is still all one big thing, but for some reason Marketplace is denser, and I just
there's
I'm
good
happy.
Stuff in there.
Well, what's funny is I have the exact opposite relationship with Marketplace. They do all the stories separately, and I'm like, oh, just give me Marketplace. I want to listen to the whole half hour because it's very rarely. I don't want to be interrupted and try to figure it out. I actually so it's two opposite relationships that I have, but those are kind of the things that I listen to anyway. So it's a
I'm putting it back
app
on.
App works great. It
took it off because of you. I'm putting it back on.
The playlists the playlist is better than ever. So if you missed it, it's and it's the way to listen to NPR. Like once you get used to building your own playlists, you will never ever go back to listening to any other way, in my opinion.
I will tell you something that NPR told me this morning. Just in case you've got any romaine lettuce in your refrigerator.
Don't do it.
Throw it away.
You know, I don't have any.
The CDC is saying there's an E. coli outbreak and all romaine lettuce, don't serve it for Thanksgiving. All romaine lettuce should be thrown away. So just a little word of warning. Here, I have two picks. One you should do, one you should absolutely not do. How about that?
There you go.
So first, this one, and actually I haven't tried it, but I want you to try it, Alex. It's a free app, noise reduction app, that mutes the background noise during your calls. The idea being you're on Slack or Facebook or Skype and talking, you know, having a business call and you in the background, daddy, or washing machine sounds or car noise. This Crisp app, it's for Macs. You put it on and it actually does it's using some pretty sophisticated technologies. Here, I'll tell you what. Let's play a little Crisp audio. I'll turn my audio back on. This is
like most leaders, you're probably juggling.
That's street noise. Shall we turn on Crisp?
But still need to make innovation a reality for
you. Okay, it's a little digitized as a result, but it's doing AI stuff. Here's a screaming child in the background.
The idea behind neural networks, or neural nets for short, is that we have nodes that have some connections between them. This is similar to
now. That's a hard thing. Noise reduction is good at constant sounds, like
right,
like an airplane. But getting rid of a child in the background, and the way you do this, you train it with your voice. So what it's doing is it's learning what your voice sounds like, and then taking anything out that's not your voice. So that's a kind of an interesting application.
I saw your link, and I haven't gotten a chance to play with it yet. Yeah. But I'm really excited.
I'm really
about
curious.
It.
I think this is you're going to start seeing more and more stuff that uses kind of,
so what kind of book are you
neural learning.
My instructor suggested I read a little about canyoneering before we go on our trip.
That's
next
pretty
time.
Amazing.
So tell
so
me.
So Crisp, you can find it at krisp.ai.
Yeah, I'm going to compare it. So one of the things that we, after I saw it, we're going to do next week is we're going to compare it to our Cedar box. I don't know if you've heard of Cedar, but Cedar is like in our industry is kind of the standard for noise removal, ambient noise removal. And so we're going to go head to head between Crisp and Cedar. We've gone head to head with Cedar with every other live noise
it's
reduction.
The best.
Nothing comes close.
Okay.
You know, so it's all you know, we can say, oh, it works differently or whatever, but Cedar is really the only one that really works. And so it'll be really interesting. We'll do a head to head. I don't know if I'll have it ready for next show, but I'll have it ready for the show after that. We'll do kind of
oh, that would be great.
Where we play really air useful conditioner in the background, and we'll okay do a couple other things, and we'll play it through the Cedar as well as through Crisp, and we'll see how they interact.
That's really cool. The other thing it does, which I'm very curious about, is supposed to eliminate chopping in voice calls by filling by interpolating and filling in the thing that was dropped.
That would have fixed a couple things on for me too. I mean, there's an interesting. Those are we've had issues with encoders and decoders where it drops just little bits, like very small slices of audio, and you know that would help me a lot. So
this is Mac only right now. This is crisp, and by the way, it does not, as they say, send the sound back to servers. It's done on device.
I'm very interested. I think they're in Berkeley.
Yeah, they are. I'm not sure why they're giving it away, but maybe because they're promoting something
else. Well, and
also,
we're all...
It does say featured by NVIDIA, so I'm wondering if they're using NVIDIA technology to promote this. Now, that's the thing you want to try. This is the thing you don't want to try. this is a shortcut somebody created, you know, for shortcuts on iOS called Shortcut Roulette. The most dangerous, least helpful shortcut for iOS 12. It's a game of chicken with your social life built entirely on shortcuts, best played with two or more people. When you activate the shortcut, you don't know what it's going to do. Your phone might do one of 100 things. For instance, maybe it'll send your last 5 selfies in a PDF to a modeling agency. Maybe it'll send your nudes to a boss. Maybe you'll get lucky and it won't do anything. I don't know if I even want to download this, and I'm on a Windows machine.
So it really is like that internet video of intentionally holding a lighter up to an iPad screen. Only it's your future social
it's
your life.
Exactly. It's truly shortcut roulette. It's just like
Say that all shortcuts can be canceled before they finally execute. But here's the fun part of the game: the first person to cancel a shortcut loses. So play this with your friends, kids. It'd be great for Thanksgiving. Especially with relatives you don't like. Shortcut.
A strange game, Dr. Falcon. The only way to win is not to play.
Exactly.
How about a nice play game of chess?
I'm going to end us with the Apple holiday ad, which just came out, and we can watch it all together. It's 3 minutes long, so we'll make it the last bit of the show. But before we do that, I want to thank Renee, of course, from iMore.com. He had to take off. Andy Anaka, always a pleasure. From Public Radio in Boston, WGBH.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Andy. I'll be thinking of you and your sous vide. I think what because normally with mashed potatoes, you have to make them right before you put them on the table. I'm now thinking this might.
They work really good. I have the time to do the butter and the sour cream and everything if I do them like a day ahead of time.
Thanksgiving I've been spending with my ricer going like this.
I will just say that my problem with Thanksgiving and other like real meals, like big meals that I'm cooking, is not so much cooking everything, but making sure everything is ready for the table at the same time.
Right.
And sous vide will like solve that problem. It's like just if you've got some fuddy-duddy people who don't think you can cook to begin with, don't let them see that for the last 15 minutes before dinner,
you're
cutting open
bags
and putting things, because they'll think, oh, great.
He went
to the supermarket and just, like, I'm glad, thank God we're not just having frozen burritos today. Like, okay.
I'll tell you how much I trust you. I'm going to actually do this on Thanksgiving. That means I'm putting my life on the line because I got the family coming over. Have a great Thanksgiving, Andy. Alex Lindsay, same to you and your beautiful children. We're so sweet. Malachi and Isabella were in the studio on Saturday for Screensavers.
They were so excited to be on. They ran home and just kept on waiting for the episode to come out so they could see themselves on the show.
So you can see that twit.tv/NSS. And I think Isabella had fun driving our toy Tesla.
She loves driving the Tesla. Yeah, she came home and she told her mom that she's like, I went and drove Leo's Tesla, and she's like, you did what? And I was like toy. You know,
it's
like
this
in
thing.
The house. Yeah, it's not large.
She's the only person who's been able to fit it in years.
It was an autopilot mode and was only on the highway where it worked really well.
Happy Thanksgiving to all of our American fans. For you Canadians, well, I hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving last month. We will be back as we are every Tuesday. We were late today, and I apologize. That's my fault. We try to hit 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 1900 UTC. If you want to watch live, twit.tv/live. You can also subscribe. Actually, you can download any show you miss at twit.tv/iOS, but you can subscribe in your favorite podcast app, and that way you'll always get the latest version the minute it's available. And we encourage you to do this. It was a tough choice. I could play the WKRP as God is my witness. I thought turkeys could fly bit. But I decided, no, that's been done. And something no one's seen before would be better. This is Apple's holiday message to all of you. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll see you next week. But now it's time to get back to work because break time is almost over. Bye-bye, everybody.
Wake up and smell the coffee. Is your cup half full or empty? When we talk, you say it softly. But I love it when you're awfully quiet. You see a piece of paper could be a little greater. Show me what you can make her. You'll never know until you try it. You don't have to keep it quiet.
Very nice.